Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Motor Mouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, a cause that means a great deal to me personally. And thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses. You can hear my story as well as the Williams Formula One team's planning director Richard Jones now, with more to come. Also, if you feel like getting involved further, the Brain Tumor Charity is running the Conquer the Challenge through till May, a virtual fundraiser for those fitness inclined, and there's a leaderboard, so if you're competitive, this is for you. All the details are at braintumorcharity.org. Together we can help every single person affected by a brain tumor. Now, as you know, without you and our sponsors, we wouldn't be able to carry on doing what we do, which is bringing you the biggest names in motorsport and delving into their lives and opinions. This season, we couldn't be happier to be teaming up with F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One this year, we're all over it. With F1 Experiences official ticket packages coming direct from Formula One, you can get unique access that simply isn't available anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when checking out online. Good things come to those who listen to the MOTORMOUTH podcast. Don't say we don't treat you well. So what are you waiting for? The 2021 F1 season is set to be one of the closest in years, so get booking your F1 experience today with f1experiences.com.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here. Now, today we are joined by yet another former Formula One driver, but he's a man that's done so much more than that. Before we bring him in, I first have to head, of course, to Essex. But this week, I'm not going to regale you with my Essex-based facts to introduce my co-host. No, I'm going to amaze you with my knowledge of our guest's hometown, which in this instance is Uphall, West Lothian in Scotland. And did you know that national treasure and former Doctor Who star David Tennant was born in Bathgate, West Lothian, a mere 12 minutes drive via Drumcross Road and the A89 from our illustrious guest, who in fact, I believe, also spent some time in Bathgate himself. Tennant's father was the local minister, Sandy MacDonald. Tennant has since moved away from the area but remains loyal to his West Lothian roots. And what do you think about that, Harry Benjamin?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm a big fan of David Tennant, so it's always good to hear what he's up to these days. No, I mean, I'm a bit upset, actually, that there's no Essex facts, but hey, Sorry. You can't have one for every week. How are you?
I'm all right. I think I've actually completely run out. I'm dry. There's nothing left. I've rinsed Essex of pretty much everything that it's ever done of any importance. I think from now on, I'm just going to come up with genius facts about our guest's hometown, and that is the first.
They'd probably rather hear that as well, I reckon.
I think so. It's probably factually incorrect as well, but we'll soon find out. Shall I introduce today's guest?
Yes, very excited for this one.
So today, as you might already be aware, we're joined by Paul de Resta. Now, Paul is British, and more accurately, a Scottish racing driver who already has loads to look forward to, as he'll be taking to the wheel of the Peugeot hypercar Beast in 2022 in an incredible-looking machine. He's been a regular in ALMS, WEC, DTM, and of course Formula One, where in recent years we've seen him also in front of the camera, impressing us all with his good humour and incredible tactical and sporting knowledge. We're here to dive into his career, thoughts, opinions, and future plans. But before we introduce him, it would be amiss of me not to embarrass my co-host, who might just be the biggest PDR fan on the planet and has frankly stalked poor Paul since this podcast began all those episodes ago, and it's frankly downright disgusting. However, fair play, he's finally got his man. Paul de Resta, welcome to the Motormouth.
I really see you learn something every single day. You know, the little fact that you had before you introduced me, I was none the wiser. You know, growing up in Bathgate all my life, I was born in Uphall.
I got it right.
In Bathgate, but, you know, I was not aware of that, so it shows you how out of touch I was.
Paul, it is brilliant to have you on the podcast. And as Tim said rightfully there, now the reason I tried so hard to get you on the podcast is, now not, I must stress this, not in a weird way, okay? I'm just a supporter, I'm a fan, and just to prove to you that I am, in 2013 I bought this, which is a lovely, for those of you who are just listening, a lovely model replica of your 2013 Force India F1 car. So it means a great deal to have you on the show. Thank you so much. I want to take it back to the start, if you're not already completely weirded out and want to leave the Zoom call already. But let's go back to the beginning. When you're a young lad from West Lothian, you had some pretty impressive racing, you know, connections already with a certain Franchitti family. But how did you first get into it? When did you think, right, okay, motorsport is going to be for me?
Well, growing up, my dad was very involved in Dario's career, who you were talking about, Dario Franchitti, and my dad was racing himself. So I was always about the kart tracks, always about when my dad was racing Formula Ford 1600 at the time, and that was mainly Knockhill, Alton Park. And I guess when you're just running about the pits, it wasn't a case of, you know, are you going to race? It was, when could I race? When could I get in it? And, you know, there's footage of me driving a go-kart before I was 3 years old around my granddad's backyard. And then I was on the track. I'm actually named after a guy that's very well known in the British karting scene, Paul Devon, who Rye House, he used to run Rye House years mm-hmm. ago, and that's obviously in the press quite a lot with Lewis over the years, because that's where he started. And it just, I guess when they say it's basically ingrained in you, it was, and mm-hmm. it never has got away from me. And I'm kind of going through the same at the moment, because I've got a five-year-old boy who's kind of, he's not actively in the cart yet because of where we are, because of how busy I am, but I can see the signs mm-hmm. that it's a case that he's, I don't need to ask him the question, to be honest. And that's what was quite nice about it. You know, it was just very much father and son with my dad. Fortunately, my dad, as soon as I started, after the first weekend, he literally said, I'm stopping. Because I won my second race a week later, 6 days after my birthday. And he kind of said, that's it, you know, I've given up and I get more enjoyment out of doing that. However, I'm not so sure I could do that at the moment, the age I'm at and the career I'm going through, and, you know, how you put bread on the table for the family, because yeah. you've got to be there to support them. And, you know, that's where granddad might come back in to play the game. But, you know, it started from such a young age. It feels like yesterday. It doesn't feel that long ago. Yet sometimes when you look back and actually see what you managed to achieve, I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking, careers, you know, coming to an end. I'm certainly on the top path of it, and it's kind of fallen down the way, but I still feel I'm in my peak, which is the bit I like.
Yeah, that's great, and good to hear that there's a mini de Resta that we should keep an eye on for the future. I'm going to skip through your very early career through karts and push through to around 2004, when you won the McLaren Autosport BIDC Young Driver of the Year Award. That was obviously a very big deal then, as it still is today, and some of the great and good of modern motorsport have won that award on their way up. Did that feel like a big milestone to you at the time, and a real kickstart, I guess, to your professional career?
So back then, going into cars kind of when you were 18 was kind of the normal thing, because senior karting, you know, you were 15, 16, 17. But I had to leave karts early just because of my size. I was too heavy. I was too tall. It just wasn't working. So we actually went a year earlier than we wanted. And what that meant is by the time I'd done my second year in Formula Renault, I was still actually too young to be eligible to go into the prize, because you had to be 18 at the time. And once you got in a Formula 3 car, it was like a no-go, because that was the car that you were referenced on for that award. So I got dispensation. I was the youngest guy to win it at that time. When I got in there, it was a massive deal, because you were up against, you know, if you look back at the names, certainly back then that have made it and made a career out of racing, it was just something that you had to have in your CV. And more importantly, the prize money for myself. But it was life-changing in the sense that part of that, part of when they were, you know, looking at every driver, you got to drive the DTM car. And obviously Mercedes, I had connections with them before that, but they said, well, we'll see how you go in that car. And that's what actually started my professional career, because straight after that DTM run, Mercedes were on the phone. And before we actually got to the night of the Autosport Awards in December, I'd already signed a contract to be a junior. So within that 3-4 weeks, they were willing to see, even if I didn't win, they had referenced me in that, and they were very comfortable to take me on. And that's where my career went. And I was still with Mercedes kind of alongside them up until the end of 2018. So it was something that meant a lot. And you know, that is definitely when I would say your professional career started.
Yeah. And you had as you said, a really strong racing career, going up against some big racing names as well. I'm sure the one that's documented the most is how you went toe to toe with Sebastian Vettel in the 2006 F3 Euro Series Championship and beating him as well. What was he like to compete against back then?
Sebastian was a very, you know, he was a very quick kid. He obviously had a great amount of backing from Red Bull and BMW at the time. We all know at that point, the German success in Formula 1, there was a lot of momentum behind them. But the reality was, we were in the same team with the same car. And the only thing I had to do, I had to make it work, because I didn't kind of have quite as much backing as he had. I had one chance at making it happen and made the best man win. And fortunately, that year, I came out on top. It was both our second year within the Euro Series at that point as well. You know, we were racing Hamilton the year before, but he was in the second year. So very much in your junior stages, it was always a two-year program at that time. You couldn't expect to go straight in and win it your first year. And it's just a step ladder to where you are. But, you know, when you look at that, when I won the Euro Series, so the top seven in the championship all made Formula One, albeit I was the last one to make it, having won the championship. This shows you, depending on your sponsors back in, where it is. But, you know, I went on to the DTM for 4 years and managed to get picked up. And, you know, being involved with Mercedes and McLaren was a key to that, because that's what opened the door to Force India.
And your DTM career has been long and impressive. How do you reflect back on that period at DTM? And do you have very fond memories of it? And also, how do you look at it now with the likes of Gerhard Berger obviously involved with it? How do you view the series in its modern form?
So it was definitely successful, I would say, when you look back at the first 4 years. I had a good record. When I went back after F1, Mercedes were in a bit of a sorry state, to be honest. They were struggling, and the first 2-3 years was painful, actually. And then somehow we managed to restructure it, regroup, and, you know, right up to the end, they had an absolute, the most dominant year that people have ever had in DTM in 2018. So it was strange how it turned around, but it showed you change can be a good thing. I love my time there. You know, I loved who they were. They were very professional. You were representing the biggest car manufacturer in the world, who they were, probably the most prestigious, I would say, throughout the whole group of what they do. They were good people. They were honest, which I think was key. And DTM, they were great cars. You know, they were V8, noisy cars that you know, looked like a road car you'd see certainly on the road, but underneath they were nothing like it. They were like a single seater. So they were exciting, and you know, I had a great time. I can honestly say I absolutely had a great time. Looking at where they are now, it's a shame, because unfortunately the cost just ran away a little bit. Mercedes pulling out always was going to be like, they were the heart and soul of the championship, and it was only time with the Audi were going to, you know, Pull or BMW, and unfortunately Audi made that decision. you know, they've pulled out a really old motorsport at the moment. They're pulling out of Formula E this year, so it's obviously a different board, but that shows you what DTM is about. It was purely a marketing budget. It's not like it's a resource and development that you can move it on. And I think that's probably where, you know, Gerhard Berger's not moved on with the times. You know, I've got a lot of respect for Gerhard, how he's done it, how he's went about the championship. He was probably at a point where when he went in, he probably couldn't see what was going to happen. But at the same time, you know, they always say it needs to be an international championship. Well, unfortunately, you need to probably get away from the name to make people see it, although it was very much dominant. Because people, you say, you know, whether you race DTM, oh, that's a German tour. Well, it's not really. It's international, but yeah, I see what you mean. You know, just don't go into the details of what it actually stands for. But it's getting away from that. And it almost happened. And what's a shame is they had lined up with the Japanese manufacturers. They'd done the race at the end of 2019, when I was racing Aston. They obviously did a combined race in Europe, a combined race in Japan. But again, with Audi doing what they're doing, yeah, there you go. But it almost got over the bridge it had to go over, and it's not. And I don't see, unfortunately, I don't see how it's going to work with the GT3 cars that they're going to go with. I'm not saying it's going to be a great championship, but you certainly can't compare it, because there's nothing like for like.
Yeah, it's keeping the DTM name, isn't it? There's no plans to change that at the moment, right? Because it's funny you say that, because people who are in motorsport, I think when you say DTM, they go, "Ah, oh, it's a great series. What, you know, fantastic cars, great action." And to those who are marginal motorsport fans, they go, "What's that?" You know, yeah. And perhaps it is, you know, part of their marketing strategy should be, let's just rebrand, you know, let's call it the Global Touring Car Championship or something different to take away that stigma that it seems to have developed.
I think what it was doing, it, people were always complaining about the noise of Formula One of recent times with the turbo engine. DTM changed to a turbo engine, but they still kept the noise. They somehow managed to keep that in there. And it was kind of going down the path of, this is entertainment. You know, this is a marketing tool. It's not about where it is, sustainability and all the rest. And I'm not saying that's wrong and I'm not saying that's right, but it gave the pure motorsport fan that was there 30, 40, 50 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, that moment where you walk into a racetrack, the hairs in the back of your neck stand up, it gave you something pure to go and watch. And if you are that, then there's clearly a position for that. And I felt that's what it offered. And somehow that's what the fans are going to get, because it's more about the other way.
I miss those days. That you remember those days when, you know, the F1 cars that you were used to driving, you know, you'd sit there at, you know, wherever, Monaco, Abu Dhabi, and the hairs on your back of your neck would stand up when you hear the cars pull away from the grid. It's amazing how quickly you forget all of that in this new era. I never think about it anymore, but it's so sad that we don't have that kind of pure form of motorsport anymore. And we probably, in a few years, it'll be gone altogether, because, you know, it's the way of the world.
I know, and I still look at myself. When people go and buy a sporty car, what's the first thing you get on it? Sports exhaust. Why is that? And you kind of think, well, and that's where, you know, I don't get paid enough money to stand at the top of boards and government level and trying to do all that. And very fortunate I'm not. I'm just saying from a very selfish point of view, what I want to see, yeah, because it's what grabbed me to the sport. And what grabbed me to the sport was, you know, wanting to get to Formula One was walking into Silverstone, walking over the bridge corner when a Formula One car went under it, and it absolutely stopped me in my tracks. You know, I was under 10, and I can still feel the shiver going through your body thinking, what is that? Even it still got me when I had it, you know, when you were going through, you stopped at the end of 2011, then you had 6 weeks off. First time you walked in the garage at Jerez, 2012, and they fired the car up, you know, just to do an thing, you were like, am I really going to drive that? Is that really, you know, what it's about? Because it gets you, whereas now, it's just very different. Now, when you go out in an F1 car, it just goes like you can't believe, and you're pulling gears, but it's not got that zing. That zing is lost, but the thrill is still there, and the thrill of driving the car, but it's the impact, that impact that you, what gets you. And listen, my, you know, my little man, he's not a big noise person, so when he hears a loud noise, he'll cover his ears. So, but quite frankly, when he's watching it, he's absolutely hooked on it. So it's just very different, and I'm only talking from my experience, what got me into it.
Well, let's talk about that first ever bit of F1 experience you got? Because obviously your Mercedes connections and your success in DTM led to you securing that first test in at the end of 2009, I think it was, with Force India. Getting in that car for the first time, talk us through the emotions of that.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I had kind of driven a car before that. So I had done, as part of the young driver, I obviously drove the McLaren. And I can't remember if it was prior to that at the time, because of the link with McLaren and Mercedes, and because I was doing a little bit of sim work, I actually drove the McLaren a few times. So I'd done a couple of, when testing was open in Wind Tunnel, wasn't that, the data wasn't great. I was running up and down a runway in Mallorca, you know, with no suspension on a car, just doing aero work. So you kind of got your grips around how it works. But, you know, the first time you get in a car in reality, when you get on an open track and get Gordon Jerez, I mean, first your neck falls off. You know, do you think that is really what it's going to be about? But it's just the, it's probably the fact that everybody that's there, you know, the 50, 60 people, all eyes on you, nothing's missed. You know, you fart, they've got it on, you know, record, you do something wrong. They've absolutely, you know, they guide you through what you can, and it's responsibility, and it's responsibility of knowing if you make a mistake, be up front, because they've already got you. You know, they know what's happened long before you. In fact, you say to them, what happened there? You know, if you have a shunt, you're like, God, there must have been something happened there. What, you know, and they can go back in the data and find that. But you get in the car, listen, they're the best cars in the world, so you know, it's a bit like, you know, I can't explain it, what it meant to me. I can only explain it to somebody wanting something in their life, whatever that is, and he managed to do it. And I'm very fortunate and I'm lucky enough that I got to do that. Some people haven't. And what that meant to me was the biggest thing at that point. Absolutely the biggest thing that grabbed me in life.
Amazing. I'm so envious. One day, Harry, we'll get ourselves in an actual moving F1 car, not just
I'm never going to fit in one. If Paul struggled when he was in karts, and he thought, I'm 6'5", and I'm not, you know, I'm not an athlete. That's not, I'm not getting in a single seater anytime soon.
We did squeeze you into Mansell's old F1 car. Just about.
Oh, that is true.
I mean, your head was flapping around, but anyway. So, Paul, things were gathering pace for you. And in 2010, you were the Force India test driver, the same year that you dovetailed with DTM and won. You got a full-time F1 seat in 2011, which lasted until 2013, at the end of which you went back to DTM. How did that departure in 2013 come about? Was it expected? How did you feel about it at the time?
It wasn't expected, but it was, I guess, millions of reasons. You know, at that point, Sergio came in. I guess it was a struggling team with budget, and that's where it came down to. You know, I've got a lot of respect for the people at Force India, where they were. It wasn't the most honest and truthful part of it, to be honest, right at the very end, how it went about and how it all happened. When you look back, definitely things could have changed where we were, you know, 3 weeks before that. It actually happened, but... yeah, I guess at that point Formula One was going through a very difficult stage, and it was even to get in another car, there was too many drivers running about with too much funds that people wanted to look at. And I guess it's still nowadays, you know, you kind of got to come through a junior system and excel, or else it's people with budget that come in, because the teams need such a level of money to top up and get to where they are, and the development probably outclasses what the driver brings into it.
Do you think when you look at some of the drivers who have paid their way in to a degree, I mean, they've got to have talent. They've, you know, they've got to have super license points. They've got to have that talent to get to the top of motorsport and into Formula One. But do you look at the likes of, for example, Lance, and think you just don't deserve to be there, or does he deserve to be there? I mean, I'm actually not that. I used to be very critical of him. I'm not so much anymore, but. When you see these paid drivers, do they deserve their chance? Do they have the talent to be there, or are there drivers out there who should be in their place?
So with Lance, I mean, he obviously deserves to be there based on his junior formula and everything he did to get there. He's obviously had the platinum spoon through his life, and, you know, what dad wouldn't do that for their son all the way through their life? You know, of course you're going to give your kids the best journey you can, and it's very much as part of it. I believe it's Lance's journey, it's Lawrence's journey, and it's what Lawrence obviously wanted to do years ago, and he's not had the chance to do it. So you can see they're passionate, they're, you know, their enthusiasm where they are. I guess where it breaks down, you know, where I would probably base Lance is, he has not been measured up against Perez in terms of consistency. So you think, well, you want to bring another driver in to up the team, and you're going to be Aston Martin. And then to get rid of Perez and the form that he's on and where he's ended up, Lance kept his drive to go alongside Sebastian. That's when people would probably say, in other teams, in other big teams, certainly the top three or four, that wouldn't have happened. You know, that wouldn't be the case because you would be going for somebody with more ability, more consistency, and more of everything. But listen, he is in the position he is, and we can't do it. He's taken a Formula One seat.
Wouldn't you say, though, that sort of we use this label of pay drivers and things like that, left, right and centre, but isn't every F1 driver really a pay driver? It just comes from different aspects. You know, you either, you know, have your family support or you're supported by, you know, a big, like yourself, like Mercedes or Red Bull. Is that fair to say that sort of really everybody's a bit of a pay driver?
I guess the statement comes from people who are paying a significant amount of money to get the seat. You know, whether that's 2 million to, you know, 40 million, and that's the level that people have brought in the past driving in the car. And, you know, that can even come from governments because they want the publicity. So it doesn't have to all be about just family money. It can be sponsors and just people trying to be aware and be, you know, how accessible Formula One is and where it goes. And you're never going to change it. That's where it is now. And you're going to get great drivers coming through. Unfortunately, you're not going to get all the best, I think, like it was years ago. But how intense it is, and, you know, going up, the likes of Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes, they need every last penny they can get.
I mean, it's all part of, it is almost part and parcel of what makes F1 so interesting. You know, it's that whole circus. And, you know, the business side of F1 sometimes is as fascinating as the racing itself, which puts it in quite a unique position.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including driver appearances, private pit lane walks, behind the scenes tours of the illustrious F1 paddock, team garages, the famous podium, and loads more. It's the closest you can get to Formula One, and thanks to F1 Experiences, Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when booking online at f1experiences.com.
Now, it wasn't the end of Formula One for you, however, 2013. You did return in 2016 as a Williams reserve driver, and actually managed to get yourself back on track after a relatively long break in F1 terms, replacing Felipe Massa for a race. How did it feel to get thrown in at the deep end after all those years?
Well, it was one of those positions when I was with Sky, and, you know, I kind of got a phone call from Claire. Well, it was like 2 weeks before the Melbourne Grand Prix in 2016, would I be interested? I said, well, I'm there most of the time anyway, so absolutely I'd be interested. But at that point, you never really thought, well, nothing's really going to happen that you're going to be there. You look at it, well, I'm involved. If something does happen, you will get drafted in. I had to be up to speed on the rules. I had to put a bit more effort in training. And you kind of think, well, the likelihood is I'm not going to see it, because I know how ill I was a couple of times in F1 weekends. You know, in India, I had extreme food poisoning, and I managed to drag myself through it. So you kind of say, well, you're not going to give up your seat, because anybody getting in your seat is just a problem.
Yeah.
And you see that with, like, what happened with George Russell last year.
Absolutely.
And with Lewis. So you're going to do everything you can and you will to do it. And when I got drafted in, it was just a shame it was at the end of the summer, just before the summer break started. Had it been the week before that Massa had his moment, you would have got a couple of Grand Prix, and that maybe would have changed my life again. But to actually just be thrown in, I obviously was very busy at that time, actively racing DTM. I had promised Mercedes that would be where my effort was. This was a backup solution. So I did half a day in the simulator that year with Williams. I was at the Grand Prix. If I was there with Williams, I left the Grand Prix on Saturday morning because I wasn't required anymore. But I kept myself up to date. And to be honest, from when it happened on the Friday night, I was kind of prepared. Then I got there on the Saturday morning and they were like, no, he's fine. You know, he thinks he's going to be okay. He went out. And I was kind of ironing my shirt in the TV compound, ready to go on Sky, because at that time, Martin Brundle was actually ill and I was filming for him in commentary. And I got the phone call and said, you need to come down because he's definitely not right and you're going to be in the car. And that 90 minutes, you kind of think, how am I going to achieve this? but they were very good. My knowledge from times before and with responsibility, I think what I was talking about before as well, you just do it. But when I left the garage and drove down the pit lane and let go of the speed limit, that's when I felt at home. That's when I felt in the office and as a car I've been driving for years. And, I went straight out of qualifying, hadn't driven a car since 2013, since I finished. I had not driven an F1 car until that qualifying session to leave it. And, I tried to do the best I could without making an absolute mess of it, bringing it back with no corners on it. At that point of the year, it's not easy because that's when people are fighting for contracts and up against it. Hungary is not an easy place, Budapest. The barriers are quite close. It's quite technical, and I try to do my best. But with every will, you can't expect to go straight in and be absolutely, there. And I think, I did the best I could.
I think it's fair to say you did a very respectable job in a car that, wasn't capable of really being up in the points consistently at all. So I think it was Toto Wolff who was full of praise for you afterwards. What was the reaction like afterwards? Because you'd done the race didn't pan out the way you would have liked. I suppose you had to retire early, but qualifying was certainly showed your progression really nicely. What was the sort of reaction you felt after the race?
It never was going to be, and that's what you couldn't expect. I hadn't even done a pit stop before the race. I hadn't even stopped in the box, And I hadn't even done a practice start until I was going to the grid on Sunday, because you're so in the moment. But it was quite amazing because obviously nobody had time to react. And I think people thought Williams were absolutely crazy. And I remember coming back in from qualifying an hour later, looking at my phone. And of all my career, it's the most I've ever had out of it. Every team principal literally had been in touch. And all full of praise. I remember Toto and Nicky calling me when they were going back to the hotel that evening and could not believe that he did it, could not believe how you represented yourself. Absolutely superb. And obviously Toto was my boss in DTM, so there was a bit of a link there, but I bumped in that evening walking back to the hotel after my dinner, bumped into Christian Horner and Dr. Marco. They were full of praise again. It was nice to see that. The McLaren people were in touch. So people who you touch upon, you could see the human element to it, and that's where it happened. And I thought, well, hopefully I'll pick up something, but I never picked up any more reserve gigs. So until last year, obviously, I was a reserve for McLaren at one race. But you think, well, people would see that's what you're about and who you are. But I guess when you're out of touch and where you are, it just depends on the journey and who they want.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear you talk about it like that. The people you rub shoulders with in Formula One, Helmut Marko, Christian Horner, Toto Wolff, Niki Lauda phoning you. It's just, there must be moments where you pinch yourself and just think, this is ridiculous. How have I ended up here? This is astonishing. Did you ever have those moments, or did you take it in your stride at the time?
Probably took it far too much in my stride. You look back, even if somebody was asking me the other day, when I look back at F1, what would I have done different? I probably would have travelled the world more, stayed on at races, done a bit more at that time. I was still, me and my wife were, we were young, we had no kids. But I wasn't. I was just, I was like, get me home, get me training, get prepared for the next race. And I should have probably just actually enjoyed life a bit more and taken it a bit less serious. But you do what you think's right at the time and what emotionally does it. I think I did throw everything at it. I'm a great believer what's for you in life is for you. And, it goes to you, and some things don't work out, some things do. But listen, I got 3 years in Formula One. It's very unlikely I'm going to get another Formula One race. Very, very unlikely. I've accepted that, but I'm still very much around. And great people. Some people have worked out for the better. Some people have worked out for the worse. But I can honestly say, hopefully I've represented myself in the best way. And at the same time, people always say, well, it must be a bit of a bummer not racing this car. And I'm like, well, there are other things in life. When my little boy was born for the first time, seeing him smile every morning, got a far bigger smile, than anything ever could in my life.
Yeah.
Put a smile back in my face. It doesn't matter what you would do. That is the most important thing in life. And you created this little creature. And I think, well,
100%. I have a 5-year-old as well. And while he winds me up no end in lockdown, it is amazing being able to be at home all the time, see them in the morning, put them to bed at night. It's a pleasure.
That's what's important in life.
100%, it completely is. I've got three of the little scamps now, and they drive me to distraction. But I wouldn't change it for the world. but before we come on to your exploits in the future, and obviously your incredible hypercar drive, which is coming up, there's a very important part of the show which I'm going to hand over to my illustrious colleague to introduce. Harry, over to you.
Yes, Paul D'Aresta, welcome to the hardest quiz in motorsport. Now, we seem to be on the theme of perspective, and perspective really is everything, I think, and that's exactly what you'll need for this quiz, because it is a quiz all about you and your career to date. We've got a mixture of some clips that we're going to play you and a couple of questions that we're just going to chuck at you. The first two things are a couple of clips that you're going to hear. Listen to them throughout, and then we're going to just ask you a couple of questions just so you see if you can provide the context as to what you're talking about. So, are you ready for question number one?
Go for it.
Let's go.
Really enjoyed it. The car is very different to what I thought it was going to be. And when you're driving a car on edge, it's always exciting. Keeps the racing spiced up, unpredictable. No one really knows who's going to win. And ultimately, it is the future. And you need to look at these things.
Okay. So, Paul, any idea what kind of car, what kind of championship you're talking about there?
Is it DTM?
Are you sure you want to say DTM?
I've got no idea. Absolutely no idea.
So I'm afraid it's a poor start. You were actually talking about Formula E when you did the rookie test for Jaguar, and those were your first thoughts. How are you looking at Formula E at the moment and how that's progressed?
I enjoyed the time that I did in that car. Obviously, it was very new. When we talk about sound before, I mean that's the opposite. You know, you drive with another sense, but it's amazing how you know when people say when people lose like their eyes or their ears or become deaf, you know, they pick up other things that kind of direct them in life, and it's just very much, you know, you change how you go and drive the car, and you know, within half a day you get around it, you understand. But the biggest thing that took me about driving a Formula E car was the actual tire noise. You can hear the tires over anything else, whereas normally the engine always outdoes that. You kind of think, well, I'm making a mess of this, I'm sliding, but you weren't. It was just the tire working on its edge, and that's obviously see with
an engine. Exactly, got to get used to it, I suppose. I think it's also worth saying that just a quick thing about the leaderboard, obviously, because that was a poor start, Paul. Caroon is last with 3.5 points, so you've got to beat him. That we've got to get more than 3.5 points.
I'm not sure he's a bit of a whiz kid,
isn't he? Exactly, right? So you know, that's why this is the hardest quiz in motorsport. I think it's out of the question now, but Mark Webber, Brendan Hartley, they're in around fifth place with 12 points. But let's see, you could crawl it back. Here is clip number two. Have a listen to this.
Well, Paul, I think the whole of Britain took a huge sigh and felt for you there because that podium was so close.
Yeah, it was very close. We're always going to be vulnerable in the strategy we're on and at what point in the race if it was going to happen. Unfortunately, I think Grosjean not qualifying great and having two fresh sets of medium starting 11 on a three-star.
Oh, he's got it. Go on then, Paul. What are you talking about there?
Bahrain 2013.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking to watch. Bahrain and Singapore actually were some pretty good tracks for you, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. The Singapore one. They were not freak podiums. That was the thing about them. They were all very racy. And you know, when you talk about people that I remember at Singapore the year before. Jensen, how he missed the back of Vettel at the start of the restart of the last safety car. I mean, that's when you talk about luck in life, because there was no skill involved there. He could easily be two cars out of the race. And Alonso, who was in front of me then, I was on to beat him, and only the safety car saved him having to do another pit stop. So the time, if it had been four laps later, it was fine, it was done. You know, the podium was there. And then the one in Bahrain, we actually took the safer option, not looking at Grosjean. We took the hard tire to think of get to the end of the race because we were in a podium position. And I know we should have took the more aggressive one because we were about four laps short of getting on just because he had new tires. Can't change it now,
gutting.
Can I?
That's all that could... No, gutting. Well, the good news is you got a full 3 points for that one. So that could go some way of making it up, maybe. we're on to beat. Next question for you. We're done with the clip. What was the reason you were unable to finish the 2013 Belgian Grand Prix?
Now, I'm assuming that's the one when Maldonado had his bit of off coming into the pitch, didn't he? His bit of brain feed.
That did happen, I'm afraid, with Maldonado.
He had that a few times, I think. Mm. That must have been a... Because I think you're on for a good result there, and then he just... what happened? It was by the pit entry.
It was the pit entry, and you know, I was kind of going for the cutback. I think he was... They were racing into the final bus stop, and I went for the cutback, and he decided at some point in the middle of the chicane that he was going to dive in the pits. I don't know if it Williams... Or if he thought, because he knew he was going to get passed, he'd just come in. And I remember it ripping the back suspension off. But that was almost the pole position on the Saturday, that one.
Yes.
I remember sitting in qualifying and the team saying, going to rain during Q3, it's going to rain. And I remember watching the screen in the garage, and they were just about, everybody was queuing it in the pit lane, and I went, hold on a minute, they've all got umbrellas up at the Kemmel Street. I was like, no, send me out an inter. We went out, got a lap in, and literally the last 30 seconds, I think four or five people managed to beat me who were in just quicker cars at the time, but we nearly did it. But that would, you know, that would have just been basically a stroke of luck, basically, because I was sitting in the garage longer looking at the screen. But I remember the team saying, no, it's not on the radar. And I'm like, don't look at the radar, look at the sky, you know, and people are boots up.
Well, you make your own luck in this game, really, don't you? So close.
Nice Karun already then.
You've beaten Karun, so we don't need to worry about him now. You're well ahead of him. So he's at the bottom. You can shove that in his face next time you see him. And we've got two more questions for you, so there's still some more points up for grabs. Penultimate one for you. You returned, obviously, to F1, as we discussed, in 2017 for a one-off race at Hungary, replacing Massa. But who won the race?
It was the Ferraris, I think,
so
Vettel.
Yeah.
Correct. Boom, he's got it in one. Okay. And now for one extra bonus point. In your first DTM race in 2007, what position did you finish in?
It was fifth or sixth.
I'm
going to say fifth.
Yeah. Oh, good call. He's got it in one. That is a strong... We had a slow start.
Strong
finish. I was lacking faith, but we've really pulled it back. Let me just do the math.
Strong finish. We need to get Karun off the bottom of this table. He's been there since day one.
He needs to come back and do it. Paul, that's a very respectable 10 points, which puts you equal with another Scot, just above him, actually, because you're the most recent to do it. 25th position with David Coulthard.
Oh,
so, you know,
company.
Good company.
Yeah, that's a good effort. Well done, Paul, for surviving our quiz. And actually, well done, Harry, for getting all the answers correct this time. Wikipedia has served you well.
This quiz really can take one of two ways. It's either completely wrong or I've nailed it. So that one seemed to work out there. So thank you, Paul, for playing the hardest quiz in motorsports.
Now, let's talk Peugeot and hypercars. That could possibly be one of the coolest looking race cars ever. First of all, massive congratulations on the seat for 2022. You must be absolutely pumped for it.
Yeah, I am. I remember it was during 2017. I was just walking about the Formula One paddock and you talk about it. And I bumped into Zach and he said to me, do you fancy doing Daytona starting next year? And I was like, well, I haven't done 24-hour races. I was like, why not? If you're up for it, I'm up for it. You know, I'm doing nothing over the winter. Went there and absolutely fell in love with endurance racing. Never, ever thought I'd want to be one sharing a car, sharing, you know, the same sweaty, soggy seat that it is and compromising on setup. But kind of got the bug for, you know, sharing a weekend and sharing responsibility and actually just having a bit more fun. And then from there, that developed into Le Mans, which I absolutely loved. And actually didn't realise what it was all about. Never ever was sure if I wanted to do it. And it has grown to be one of my favourite events I've ever done. And, you know, with the introduction of hypercar coming in, I definitely wanted to align myself with the manufacturer. I wanted to get in there. Aston Martin, when I was doing the DTM thing, you know, I was speaking to them. I was excited about that program. You know, I also have good links with Red Bull, and they were following me through that as well. But then when Peugeot came on, when the Peugeot thing came up and they started talking, I mean, to fall into that was just key. And that was after a very strong WEC last year and winning Le Mans, qualifying on pole. Couldn't have happened at a better time. And I'm very excited what this is going to be about because, you know, with the 908 cars, you know, I remember what they were about. I'm neighbours with Alex Virch. We train every day together. He was obviously part of that programme. He talks a lot about it, talks a lot about who they are, what they were about, how professional they are. And I've got that sense And to be honest, great people so far and how they've worked. You know, I've known them for the last 4 or 5 months while we've been doing this in the contract discussions, and I'm excited to see it. You know, I get my first taste of it next week, get to kind of go up there. They're measuring me up because I'm the tallest driver to make sure the car is built for me to get in it. But to be there at the start of something like this is just going to be special. And I think given that they're French and Le Mans is what it's about, there's going to be definitely something and hype about this.
That is so exciting. Are you able to tell us, you know, obviously a hypercar is replacing the LMP1 category. What the key differences do you think between the two?
So the hypercar is essentially what they're trying to do is get back to what it was back in the GT40 Ferrari kind of, and Porsche days of Le Mans. When you kind of look at the car that's on track and kind of see resemblance of a road car you can get. And it's a combination of obviously the kinetic side of things, a hybrid, four-wheel drive, because the hybrid's on the front, a combustion engine on the rear, a V6. And what they're going to do is, all these, different cars could go and race. And what they've done with hypercar is they've brought in also quite cleverly brought in the LMDH rules, which means it's a more spec chassis. But other manufacturers can then take this and they can race it in the IMSA series in America. So you can combine both championships. So I think of brands who are, got the bigger partners can then rebadge it and go and race this car in America. They can race it in Europe. And, they can mix it. And what they've done is managed to reduce the budget to do it. So they've managed to bring it to an achievable point of going professional racing. And already, you've got Toyota, you've got Peugeot, you've got Audi coming to it, you've got Porsche, I think Acura, there's a Honda, basically, for anybody who's done stuff in America. And then you've got Clickenhouse, which is obviously not as well known. And they're going to BOP them. So they're going to be more, yes, there's that element of you're up against how they see you racing and them getting it right. But at the same time, you've got to play the BOP to get it right. So it's not all about just throwing money at it. So if you were comparing it to Formula One, they would pull back Mercedes after the first race and say, hold on, you're a bit too quick here. But it's about making sure you're quick in the right places and playing the game. And at some point, it'll play into your benefit.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. It's going to be a super cool series and the cars look incredible. It's going to be amazing. We're heading towards the final part of the show and we will let you get on with your day soon. And we have a final three questions which we ask all of our guests. Before we come on to that, we know that you're a very quick racing driver. You've had a glittering career, both in the car and obviously with Sky Sports in your more recent days. But what are you crap at? What are you totally useless at?
Am I useless at? I can't do keepy uppies. Oh. Never been into football. Never happened. I just, anytime you put football in front of me, my 5-year-old could probably outclass me.
You're a Celtic fan, aren't you?
Celtic is what the family's followed, yeah. I'm not saying I'm a fan. I'm definitely not a fan. I'm not one of these people. But family have and people I'm friends with. So I've been to a few Celtic games with friends over the years. But at the same time, I'm just, I like to watch a good game of football as I do like to watch a good game of rugby. And we had a good game recently.
Let's not talk about the rugby. We'll just park that one there, okay? We don't need to cover that. Motorsport podcast here.
You've got to brag about it because we don't get a lot of time to do it.
No, fair play. Fair play to you. It was an impressive result. Yeah, whatever. Let's move on.
I'll move it on, Paul. I'll flip that on its head. So we know what you're awful at. Apart from racing, is there anything you're incredibly talented at? Have you got a hidden talent that we don't know about?
Well, I wouldn't say I've got a hidden talent.
How are you? How's he cooking?
Cooking's all right, actually. Cooking was quite good, but I leave the role more to my wife now.
Yeah.
To be honest, why has kind of become that? Because I travel so much. It's such a good time for me to try and spend with the kids.
Yeah.
It's that half an hour when she gets to, and she probably likes the piece, to be honest, for half an hour, where she can just get in her zone. But yeah, I can cook. I can definitely, something I enjoy doing. But the way it kind of works is when I'm at home, I spend the time with the kids when she's doing dinner. And she's just happy not to have them running around her ankles, to be honest.
Yeah.
And worrying about it. But I very openly admit, when you're in the racing world, you like to be quite clean. So I'm very much one of these people that, I'll run around the house and happily help tidy up and clear up because I don't like living in a mess.
Yeah, no, I can see.
Bit of OCD?
definitely. I call it CDO, to be honest, and that's an alphabetical order.
Very good. Brilliant. Before we come on to our final three, Harry, I'm going to ask Paul one random question, which either people look at me like, Tim, you're a complete dick. What are you talking about? Or they just roll with it. So I'm just going to come out with it and see where it lands. Paul, would you go for, if you could, would you choose to be covered in feathers or scales? And why? I like that you're thinking about it.
I'm going to say scales because you'd be more... I don't know, feathers just doesn't really do it, but the OCD just doesn't happen, does it?
Ah, that's a good point.
You're one of the only people to go for scales,
the very first.
So it's refreshing, really. A lot of people think with feathers they can fly, but with scales you could, I suppose, swim quite well.
Well, you live in Monaco, you're by the sea, you could go for very fast swims every day, make Alex Wirtz look like an idiot. Thank you for answering that. Now, our final three questions, and you can take these in any way you like and answer them in any way you like. Harry, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, Paul, what's got you excited at the moment?
What's got me excited at the moment? It's hard to be excited, isn't it? Because you don't really know when you're coming out of the end of moving on. But I'm going to say definitely the hypercar program. Getting in with that, because it's tough outside Formula One for professional drivers. Very tough. And to be respected and to still be in the job that you love doing. Credit to it.
Yeah.
Is that the plan for the rest of this year? Is it just working on that 2022 program?
So I'll be working on development and stuff like that. But I still don't have anything even to drive this year yet. So I need to find myself I'm going to be having a year in the sidelines. But there's a few little things going on, but nothing concrete.
Fair enough.
Okay. And how much of your success would you put down to luck and right place, right time? And how much would you put down to sheer hard work?
Listen, you can always be lucky. You can always be unlucky. I'm going to say it's definitely more balanced towards hard work. And I've thrown everything at it, absolutely everything. I don't really know what would have been the outcome had I not made it. I definitely wasn't good enough at anything else. Or, I had a good business mind that my dad taught me the true morals in life and how to live your life and how to kind of bring the family business along. But I didn't have another automatic I'll fall into that that happened. So, I'm going to put it more like 80-20, that side of things that, I've thrown as much as I could at it. When I look back, maybe I could have done more, but at the same point, you've got to enjoy your life and you've got to smile.
I think you've got the perfect attitude for it. And now, final question though, what are you scared of?
What am I scared of? Probably that I'm not going to, I'm trying to think how you phrase this. Probably I've not lived my life to its full when I've been young enough because I've sacrificed so much for what I've done. And that's the biggest thing. And that's being honest. I could have done a lot more when I was young, but then I've taken it upon ourselves that, the impression I've had, let's have kids early enough. Let's try and get a life back, think about the future, but listen, there might not be a future. And that's something that you take either early in life or take late in life. And I've kind of put my eggs in my basket to try and do that later in life.
Yeah, excellent. Well, listen, I'm going to let Harry sign off, seeing as he is your biggest fan. So, Harry, over to you to close the show.
Paul D'Arresta, thank you very much for, first of all, putting up with my endless pestering for the last however many months it's been. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Most Mouth podcast and really refreshing to hear your thoughts on life in general and how you look back on your career. We're super excited to see what this year brings, but also, of course, what 2022 has in store for you as well with Peugeot and Hypercar. Paul D'Arresta, thank you so much for coming on to the Motor Mouth podcast.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. As I said, it wasn't for... I just wanted to be able to talk openly. Yeah. The past few months, I've not been dingy in your emails. They haven't been still in there. So, and I've only got six or seven emails in the inbox. So you were one of them. So you were quite important. My email is kind of my to-do list. It's my to-do list. So
Don't worry about it, and I get it. I'm used to it. No, but you're a very busy man as well. But we appreciate you sharing your future plans as well. And thank God you did wait, because they're really exciting. So, best luck for the rest of the season, and we'll hope to speak to you soon.
I'm sure we will speak again anytime. Give me a call, and I'll get you the right time, if not during the summer.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality, and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences. experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first-class hotels, travel, and exclusive behind-the-scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend. F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package today, head online to f1experiences.com, and if you enter code Motormouth, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.